Audiobook in MP3 of The Voice of Venus, Ernest L. Norman. Intro. I have an old, soon 60 years old, wisdom book in my library that I think many should have access to. This preface was compiled in the extreme necessity of acquainting any and all individuals who may be interested, and by reason of their interest, assumed to be in a receptive position whereby they can realize the great and tremendous importance of Honorius, and as the expressing element of Honorius, Ernest L. Norman and his life should therefore become known to those so interested. Honorius equals universal articulate interdimensional understanding of science. The second meaning is a definition in which he states that Honorius means love in action. Inasmuch as his life was a constant succession of miraculous psychic demonstrations, these should be used as incontestable proof to those who may be wavering and need some bolstering power to crystallize their own efforts in faith. Inasmuch as no written diary was kept, these various depictions were drawn from memory and dictated in the accustomed manner and delivery, as were all Honorius transcripts. In complete justification of the purpose involved and served, no attempt should be made to equate them in terms of personal relationships or which may be classified as an extruded ego. The author is quite aware of all psychological aspects involved and their impacts. So far as common nominators are used and in this frame of reference, all superlatives become inadequate to describe even one psychic experience, and this fact will be verified by anyone who has passed through the prescribed limits of mortal life and transcended into the realm of the psychic world. Therefore, the author feels fully justified in serving the common cause, which will inspire any individual to aspire to a higher way. The Voice of Venus. Chapter I. To the planet Venus I bid you welcome for my people and for myself. I am known as an avatar and I would show you some of our ways of life and some of the wonders of the spiritual realms. But first, in order to understand what might better be called a plane, or a dimension, as it is sometimes referred to by the people of the earth, we may liken these things to something similar to a large soap which is being blown by a child with the familiar bubble pipe, and while the bubble is a thing beauty and glows with iridescent colors, yet if we were to examine it under a powerful magnifying glass would find it even more wonderful. For here are microscopic particles of water, each one rounded, and each one adheres to its neighbor by the law of adhesive relationship. And so likewise is the great cosmic universe about us and the many suns and planetary systems, each one adhering to the other's rough the laws of great universal magnetic structures or lines of force, and countless suns make one star cluster, which is known as a galaxy by your astronomers, and each galaxy is but a pinpoint of light in the great celestial universe. Yet there are universes beyond universes, each one occupying a relationship something similar to the water droplet in the soap bubble. And like the soap bubble, which represents an adhesive mass of particles, supported by other adhesive particles called the atmosphere, so likewise are the countless universes, which are strung out through what you call space. They are likewise supported and maintain their relationship with what is called the material plane by other supporting structures, which can be called, for want of a better name, dimensions. If we look at the beam of a searchlight, we will see that from the point of emergence from the lens, as it progresses farther and farther away from its source, it loses its brilliance and intensity. So likewise does your mind function. If we visualize the energizing life force, which is the sustaining and motivating factor in all things about you, such sustaining force must be of such frequencies or intensities that are compatible with your perception. For perception is necessary in all stages of soul evolution, and while the many dimensions or planes extend on and on into infinity, to your mind this infinity is somewhat likened to the searchlight beam, and the farther your mind must travel, more correctly, to visualize such infinity, such dimensions are not compatible with your present status of conception. These factors, as they have been explained, must be borne in mind before it is possible for the Earthman to visualize such phenomena as flying saucers or space travel. Likewise, it is extremely difficult for the Earth scientist to conceive anything which is beyond his own realm or dimension, and with such instrumentation as he has contrived to substantiate his limited perception. It is one of the tasks of each individual, in making his soul evolution, that he must first set about to tear down his preconceived limited concepts. It has been said about many of the numerous scientists, as they call themselves, on the Earth plane that they have contrived something of an understanding in their relationships with other dimensions. They have likewise numbered these dimensions such as the third, fourth, fifth, etc. Such a concept is like the child who picks up a handful of shiny pebbles and thinks that these are the only pebbles in the world. A dimension cannot be numbered, neither can it be called higher or lower than its neighbor, for a dimension is roughly an accumulation or spectrum of vibration, which maintains a certain basic harmonic relationship. It is one of the common fallacies of the Earth man to believe that energy is destructive or that it is sinful. He must always remember that all energy has as its emanating force or fountainhead what is sometimes referred to as the Supreme Being in Earth language, and while Earth men may use or misuse energy in some destructive form, yet it cannot remain destructive, for such is the way of energy from this infinite fountainhead. Thus through the evolution of time must it ever be, and through the many lives of each individual, that while the individual is misusing energy destructively, he is unwittingly learning its proper usage, so the end result becomes one in which the supreme wisdom of the fountainhead teaches all mankind, each in his own way, and so therefore can never become destructive. In our own planetary system, the Earth astronomer has found through his telescopes various other heavenly orbs or bodies revolving in fixed orbits around our central Sun, and he has assumed from such external appearance or from studies made by refractory instruments that these planets, as he calls them, can or cannot sustain life as compared to the life about him on his own Earth plane. Such a concept is extremely limited and baseless, and while he calls himself a scientist, he has not reached the point in his mental evolution where he can visualize anything beyond the spectra of his own 100 elements, and thus he has become like the child with the pebbles. Each and every planet in this solar system could quite possibly support life in one of the various innumerable dimensions, which lie outside the realm of perception for the Earthman. It can also be said that while the Earthman sees about him many things which are completely intangible, as far as his own perception is concerned, even though, ironically, he may have created these so-called intangibles. He may think he has the picture of the atom semicolon, yet he has never seen one. He may send pictures and sound through the air, and yet he is not quite sure how this is done. Life for the Earth scientist is an almost daily breakdown of many of the time-honored and treasured laws of the past. This has been going on for thousands of years, so likewise will the thousands of years of the future hold breakdowns of many of the ideas and laws which he has set up for himself at this day and time. Through your mediumship, you are given a factual picture of life on the planet Mars. This planet lies closer to your own spectra than any other of the planets of the solar system. In fact, one of your races of people is a migrant from this planet. Let it be said to the astronomers of your Earth that they have not seen all of the planets of your solar system, for there are others which reside in different spectra and therefore cannot be viewed or analyzed by any means known to your Earth people. The planet Venus has always been something of great mystery to the Earth astronomer, because it seems to be shielded by what appears to be masses of clouds. This is erroneous. These so-called cloud masses or vapors are actually substances which reside outside of the realm or spectra of the 101 known Earth elements. They are actually, in a sense, condensed masses of waveforms of high-frequency energies which are kept like a protecting envelope around the planet through certain applied laws of frequency relationships. This has been done purposely by the highly developed minds which live on Venus to avoid what would be an obvious state of confusion of the Earth people, inasmuch as if they could see through their telescopes the actual surface of Venus and its radiant beauty as well as its completely different spectral analysis, it would not yield to any known scientific Earth definition. The materials which compose this planet, while they might appear to be solid if you were standing there, are actually outside the realm of frequency relationships with which the Earth people are familiar in their own spectra. In other words, it is something similar to your equation of water. While water is actually gas, in different temperatures it changes and becomes solid, liquid or gaseous. So likewise could any of your 100 known elements assume entirely different properties or relationships under different atomic frequencies and yet still remain the same reactive element. Life on the planet Venus is in all phases and all relationships, and does exist in an advanced state of harmonic frequency relationships. If an Earth being was suddenly transported in the flesh to the planet Venus, he might find himself in a similar position to a man floating in mid-air in a steam room. While the same water vapor frozen on a surface could easily support him, it could not support him as steam or vapor. The Earth scientist has to learn two basic facts about atomic structures. He has partially succeeded in this in molecular relationships, but has not visualized the same principle of conception in the frequency rate of vibration of the so-called atomic structures. Therefore, the man with his Earth body on the planet Venus would more or less find himself in his Earth body and Earth mind in a world which was completely devoid of form and substance. Neither could he see any of that which was about him, and he would quickly perish or separate himself from his Earth body in what is called death, because of his lack of perception. Life on the planet Venus is made possible only to those who have evolved in their spiritual progression to a point where an entirely new and unlimited perception has become a vital and integrated working agent of their life force. Under such conditions, all phenomena, such as is known to Earth people, is a common part of the life of every Venusian. Your own avatar of spiritual science, whom you call Christ, demonstrated a factual working facet of this conception. In other words, the mind of each individual becomes an integrated working part of the great fountainhead, and as such an individual participant can, and does, direct this life-giving, all-energizing, all-constructive, all-intelligent force into everything about him and into everything he does. For example, he does not need to do as the Earthman does in making his clothes, gather the wool or the blossom and go through the lengthy manipulative processes to construct these garments. Instead, the Venusian takes this vital constructive energizing force from the fountainhead and so directs it through the science of his own mind that it becomes the shining luminous garments about him. Likewise are his dwellings and all the things about him so constructed. But I see your Earth minds are tired, and so I will leave you for the present, but I shall return on the light frequency beam when conditions are proper and necessary. From the people of Venus I bid you Godspeed. Chapter 2. While speaking to you last time, I may have said some things which may have seemed very strange to you, for, before taking an astral flight to Venus and witnessing a factual portrayal of what is to be seen there, it is necessary to go beyond the commonly accepted standards of Earth life. Even the most learned men on your Earth planet would be less than infants in our world. We do not wish to depreciate or to cause any man to feel a sense of inferiority because he has not progressed in his soul evolution to a point where he could visualize such things as are in this realm and dimension. The thought patterns of mankind on the Earth are such universally used and commonly practiced elemental thought patterns, which have been relived basically throughout the pages of history. The thought pattern of the average Earth person is very simple and elemental. He is taught, and learns from infancy, to compare all the things he sees about him in direct proportion to such outside or external stimulating agents, such as fear, pain or hate, which induce certain reactive thought patterns within the child's mind. These are further strengthened and solidified with the passing of years, and inasmuch as his fellow man about him is likewise so steeped in these traditional thought patterns, the net result is that he is continually at strife within himself and that he takes recourse to factors of safety by some semblance of unified community or civic government, which in all cases is only the determining factor of safety against other communities or nations. All in all, such a reactionary thought pattern as is practiced, individually and collectively, among communities or nations becomes the agent of outward expression of the individual. The hatreds, fears, insecurities and other reactionary factors that form this conglomerate and collective mass of negation must, and always does, cause such calamities as wars, plagues and mass murders. Contrast this reactionary way of life to one which has been described to you from your sister planet Mars or, in somewhat a similar fashion, to those who evolve onto the planet Venus. While it cannot be said that a child here is born of the womb, but rather is a product of evolution from some spiritual plane of progression, yet the beginning of the life of an individual on the planet Venus can in many respects be likened to the periods of infancy, adolescence and adulthood. However, here the similarity ceases. Usually such individuals arrive at our way of life with a conscious retained memory factor of all they have been before. There are none of the usually associated periods of loss of memory through some lower phase of reincarnation. So therefore the individual begins his life cycle in something of a state of consciousness which you might call mastership. The child, if he can be called such, is beginning his evolutionary cycle, though life on this planet is not concerned with the factor of self. He has long ago lost his personal sense of ego and its many fearful implications and assumed instead the cloak of statehood which links him with the great and universal brotherhood which is not concerned with self, but only with the betterment of the countless billions of his fellow men which have not yet evolved into a state of spiritual maturity. In direct contrast to the limited perspective which the Earthman sees about him, the Venusian has before him the unlimited vistas of an infinite universe. Instead of being bound by fetters which are of steel-like strength and made of the substance of one's own fears and insecurities, he sees before him the limitless heights into which he may travel beyond the ends of time, as you measure it out to yourselves in your earth lives. In our previous discussion, other factors were mentioned, such as the relative values of what you call solid substance or mass and what is called energy. Many years ago, one of the more learned men of your earth attempted to explain the relationship of mass and energy. This man, working in conjunction with a college, attempted also to explain the transmission of energy. While these explanations, being more advanced than any previous explanations, seem to satisfy the need of the present-day generation, and while the Earth scientists were advanced by their understanding and usage, yet one important and vital factor was missed. This important factor, which should have been included in these hypotheses, was the element of frequency. Before I progress further, however, I must explain that the word frequency is used only for the want of a better word. In general terminology, as you understand frequency, it is the coming and going, or reoccurrence of successive movements which are related to time and space. A person may come and go into his home, the number of times being the frequency, or your electric house current is moved on the surface of the wire in short bursts or pulsations at the rate of 60 per second. Here again the elements of time and space are involved. In other dimensions the term frequency would relate only to such movements of force or energy which have a basic fundamental relationship according to the circular path in which they travel. These are things may be a little difficult for your earth minds to understand, for many of the associated factors of your earth lives are interwoven with the elements of time and space. Your next step of evolution may take many thousands of years to eliminate these elements from your thinking. Reasoning or logic, and the power of mental assimilation, become comparatively easy in your newfound freedom, for with the elimination of time and space you will be able to travel, as it were, mentally into other realms and dimensions, or reoccurrence of successive movements, and which meaning of frequency is just beginning to be basically understood by the Earth scientist. He was found that with high pulsating currents through certain types of crystals he can regenerate frequencies or vibrations up to a million times per second. It makes little difference that he is still erroneously calling these frequencies sound. For sound in its true sense relates only to the spectra which can be conceived with the human mind. What Earthman has actually begun to find is a whole new world which he may call vibration, but which he will find from time to time will break down many of the strongly conceived so-called physical laws. One of the things the Earthman must find out himself is that there are no laws. A law exists within his mind only as a preconceived principle, and all the written laws in the world are not worth the paper they are written on, simply because laws, whether civic or spiritual, resolve into the moral character of the individual. Likewise, in approaching the great fountainhead which we will call God, we will find that, contrary to belief, God has no laws. He has placed no restricting fetters upon your growth or your downfall. God in his infinite wisdom knows that what is sometimes called sin, resolves only into preconceived notions of right and wrong, which become pertinent vital issues with the spiritual evolution of the individual. But I am digressing. Getting back to the more, shall we say, elemental question mark understanding of what is mass and energy, as I have pointed out, the frequency factor has not yet assumed its true relationship in the earth plane science. Man uses energy in many ways. This relates to the transmission of such energy, in its many uses, in the world about him. He has not yet discovered in a true scientific fashion that the relationship of this frequency to atomic structures, as he calls them, is the basic underlying and determining factor in what he calls mass or weight. Your avatar Christ, who was at one time master of Venus, explained this principle of relationship in a very simple way by walking upon water and by resurrecting himself from a stone tomb. In other words, by simply changing the basic relationship of the atomic structures within his body with the higher dimensions or the source, he became weightless and was able to pass through seemingly solid stone. While in such a condition, of being weightless or without the appearance of solidity, the various atomic structures of his body, which you call elements, were not in the least changed in the relationship to your third dimension, or earth structures as you call them, except in factors of solidity and weight. In other words, they would have still been reactive in the chemical test tube or the spectroscope as such commonly designated elements which are known to compose your bodies. Likewise, all of the 101 odd elements which are known to Earth scientists could be changed in their relationship to the higher dimensions or to the fountainhead, and would likewise become weightless and without solidity, or by the same token be made so infinitely heavy that they would defy all your preconceived ideas of understanding. Some of your Earth astronomers have postulated a reasonable equation in their researches by declaring they have found a star which contains atomic structures so dense that a cubic inch weighs 2,000 tons. May I again remind you that the terms weight, solidity, time and space are only factors which have been induced in your present-day Earth life understanding. Therefore, a trip to Venus, if it could be assumed, by any Earth person in a physical body in which he walks about the Earth, would find conditions on the planet Venus quite different than he may have anticipated. The astronomer on Earth had succeeded to a certain degree in theorizing that certain chemical elements exist on or in the planet Venus which are similar to those on the Earth, but lo, my friend, he would find to his surprise and chagrin, that these elements are vastly different in his commonly accepted understanding of solidity or weight. An ancient man of more advanced understanding, while sitting in his bath, found that each earth element, such as silver and gold, displaced, when immersed, different quantities of water. He was so elated by this discovery that he ran down the street naked, screaming, "Eureka, I have found it!" Even in your present-day understanding, this so-called law of specific gravity has been displaced by a more accurate system of atomic weights. If the ancient man were living today in your world and time, he would not need to immerse the king's crown in water to find that the king had been defrauded and that it contained silver. I am pointing out this story to you that in the course of history or evolution, man will and does, though sometimes ever so slowly, progress. I could point out many and numerous displacements in physical laws which are related to the evolution of the Earth people. Therefore, in the future, it can be justly prophesied that man will reach greater heights in his understanding of all the things about him. He will learn that his mind is bound only by his own preconceived notions. He will find, in breaking these bonds, the untrammeled limitless infinite vistas of God's infinite cosmos. He will also learn to lose the importance of his own selfish ego consciousness, and thus become, what he must become, a vital integral participant in a universal brotherhood of man. Chapter 3. Good evening, I am known as Shattok. I will speak for Malvas, he will not be with you this evening. However, we all speak the same language, so nothing will be lost. Malvar belongs to the council and is in the upper chamber this evening. In the two previous talks by my worthy brother, he discussed at some length a few of the underlying principles in the construction of what is called matter, and while these discussions seemed rather lengthy, it is necessary to prepare you, as otherwise the true meaning of much that will be described to you, or that you may see with your mind's eye, may be lost. In passing in review what has been previously explained, I hope that by now you will have begun to understand just what is meant by the relationship of mass and energy, and that mass and energy are all one and the same, the difference being in the way in which they are perceived, according to such dimensional factors as time and space. In the atom we find energy expressed in the relationship of time and space in such a way that it is seemingly solid or as mass. The lighting which streaks through the sky, or the light from the sun, is somewhat the same energy expressed in a different way, with the factors of time and space. Now that we have begun to understand the natural phenomenon of energy either as a moving dynamic force or as an apparently solid substance, we must not say that the expression or materialization of mass and energy is confined in what might be called the natural sequence of such manifestations as you are accustomed to in your daily lives. In other words, you will find individually in your soul evolution your own particular cycle whereby you shall be able to use and direct energy from a higher dimensional plane, through the channel of the mind and without the use of the hands. In your earth life existence, ideas are formed usually through the interrelative thought processes. In order to materialize such an idea, it must be worked out with the various materialistic processes which you have evolved in your daily transmission of life. The use of familiar everyday objects about you were all originally such ideas. The watch which you wear on your wrist or the machine you call the automobile are all products of countless ideas and were brought into materialization only through a great deal of work and experimentation. In a more highly evolved state of consciousness, such an idea of materialization would of course seem very crude. Such negative qualities as fear of human error, tolerances and production failures do not enter in. Such a highly evolved mind conceives, visualizes and realizes the infinite perfection of universal energy which stems from the fountainhead. Such energy needs only the proper directive channel to individualize its potentialities. You people of the earth have often called this energy God, and as has been explained, as God it is infinite. So he must express, not all of infinity, but infinite individualism. It is that infinite wisdom of God which has conceived that by the creation of man he has individualized himself, and that as man exists in the countless planes and dimensions in which God expresses and lives in the infinite, so he also likewise expresses himself in all these realms and dimensions in a finite way. Therefore, my friends, we must not say that I am better than such a man, nor look down on someone whose skin is of a different color. Likewise must we love everybody. For if we love not them, how can we love our God who has created himself in a finite way in every man? Now that we have discussed our relationship with the infinite Creator, we can begin to visualize that it is indeed a great and sacred thing and one of holy trust when in this stage of evolution we find ourselves an open directive channel for this God force. And yet here again is God expressing infinity, for in all other roles he has assumed the supreme position of the Master Creator. So now he becomes in a finite way subservient through the channel of man's mind. This has been expressed in a lesser degree in the creative ideology of the people of the earth and of similar planes, God there as in all other places still being the prompting uplifting overlord. IQ assuming the role of mastership, God and his wondrous creative power and wisdom became the complete obedient servant of the individual. For now the individual can direct this creative intelligent energy in such a manner that it will create all of the things that the individual deems necessary for the time and place. The Avatar Christ, in performing his miracles, did just this. The story of the loaves and fishes is one in which the creative life energy of God was so directed that it became loaves and fishes. A closer analysis of this process would reveal that this creative structure was followed by a secondary instantaneous regrouping into molecular structures and thus became fishes and bread. You may ask how it is possible for the mind of an individual to assume mastership over God, as it may at first appear. This is not correct. We must remember that the individual is God only in a finite personalized form, and in expressing individualized personality has assumed a correct and delicately balanced relationship with infinite God. On the planet Venus we all have, who are living here, taken our first step in the relationship of such mastership. It is here in our daily lives that we put into practice this harmonious creative relationship with the Fountainhead into all of the acts of our daily lives. Mind is the creative principle, using and directing this God force in the creation of all the essentials of life. As was touched upon previously, your familiar sense of mass or solidity would be valueless here.